by Aklam Chemlali from the Danish Institute Against Torture in Copenhagen, Denmark. Aklam Chemlali is a program manager at the Danish Institute Against Torture in Copenhagen. She holds a bachelor's in medical science and a master's in health science. Her dissertation was written on the victims of violence and torture in post-conflict Libya with fieldwork in Benghazi. She's part of multiple international research programs, has conducted research activities and field missions in several low-income countries and post-conflict settings across sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, and North Africa region, and South Asia.
Thank you. I will present this study that was conducted in Libya, a national survey, with the aim of... can anyone... I'll just do this. And this was basically made to provide dignity, Danish Institute Against Torture, and other actors supportive of interventions for traumatized people, and to provide information on unmet needs, experiences. And I'll just start with the methodology that was chosen. It was really based on recognizing the fact that the Libyan population just came out of 42 years of dictatorship, and that torture, war trauma, and mental health really wasn't a part of the vocabulary and practice in Libya. And thus, regarding these issues, we had to include a qualitative phase that started with interviews, in-depth interviews, going into and feeding into the structure of developing a quantitative questionnaire. And in these interviews, we categorized or we grouped three groups: ex-political prisoners, the Thowar, that were the young revolutionary fighters, and female family relatives. And about 10 from each group conducted interviews with them, and themes and codes that came out of these were then helping developing and strengthening the questionnaire. The sampling strategy, we ended up with 2,692 households, and then divided in 22 sharbiyas, the provinces, and then further divided into 670 mahallas, which are localities, and then different phases of multi-state random sampling techniques. And eventually the face-to-face personal interviews. And this really ensured a complete demographical and geographical representation for the Libyan population. Obviously, I won't be able to present all of the results due to time, but I will highlight some of the main findings. And this is tribalism. One of the results that were quite... This is really not good. One of the results that really came out was that 80% identified themselves as a member of a tribe. And this is really reflects the early creation of the major armed militia groups in the country based in Benghazi, Misrata, and Zintan. And it really pinpoints and explains the challenges of state formation and the problems we see today in Libya and the division creating and the difficulties in creating a unified security structure, lack of agreement on a democratic discourse, and an example constitution and legal system. When you have allegiances and legitimacy of authority really resting in tribal hierarchies and historical power structures rather than the state. And this is really also why, in my opinion, we see Libya today divided between two governments, one in Tobruk, one in Tripoli, and then you have a UN proposal, unity government, that no one really wants to approve of. Another result that was also quite crucial is that the consequences at the level of the major displacement is a big concern and really could indicate a major source of long-term human suffering and political instability. About 17.7% of the respondents reported that displacement during and after the conflict and almost 90% of those reported still being displaced 3 years after the conflict. And this situation has only been worsened by the migrant crisis and the refugee crisis right now happening, especially in Libya, being a transit country from the West African migrants and the East African, as well as the influx from Syria and Iraq. So we could see that this number could be even higher now, and because of all these mixed flows in the country, who's a refugee, who's a migrant, and who's an IDP, it's really difficult to know that. Data show that torture was widespread and systematic, and this was both found in the quantitative survey, but also in the qualitative interviews. And as you can see, every fifth household has responded to having a family member disappeared, 11% having a household member arrested, 5% reported one killed. And then of those arrested, you have 56% reported beatings, 20% positional torture and suspensions, that could be like the Palestinian hanging and other different torture methods. And then you have suffocation, and 3 to 5% reported having suffered sexual or electrical torture. And this was really also found in the interviews. Also in Libya, a lot of this torture was filmed and circulated as video mobile phones, basically war trophies that were sent around, both as part of and a form of entertainment, but also to shame the different tribes. There was a lot of revenge attacks after the fall of Gaddafi, and a lot of these videos went viral of people getting tortured or raped. The consequences at the level of the populations are massive. You had 29% reported anxiety, 30% depression, 6% PTSD. And the reason why the PTSD is much lower than anxiety and depression could point to what the respondents at the time of interview may have still been in the acute or post-acute stage and yet reached post-trauma stage. And this, remember that this study was conducted a year after the revolution and the uprising. So consequently, the number could potentially increase over time and people move out of the conflict mode into the post-traumatic stage of suffering. And with the upheaval of the violence currently and since last year, when it gotten even worse, we really expect that this number could be much higher, alongside physical injuries and somatic pain. Libya, as in many countries in the Middle East, has a practice of really not seeking support for psychological problems. It's taboo to talk about mental illnesses, and the very the psychologists and psychiatrists that we worked with and that I met had very limited experience of treating trauma and dealing with consequences of torture and war. And in addition, and as a consequence of the lack of priority from the state, severe social stigma exists regarding those affected by mental illness. And mental illness is by many considered as a demonic possession, and psychiatric symptoms are attributed to the act of pagan symbols like the evil eye, magic or sorcery, and especially in the tribal communities in the south and in the desert area. So a common form of health-seeking behavior is the traditional healers like sheikhs or religious leaders who can communicate with these evil spirits that are causing these mental illnesses. And you can see almost a fourth of the respondents, 24%, indicated they needed support from a religious leader to cope with life stress, and 18.1 indicated traditional healers for support. And this was also very consistent in the qualitative pre-study, comparing to, for example, medical doctor in community, where it's only 15.7%, and NGOs 11.1%. So in conclusion, the study really revealed that widespread human rights violation had taken place in Libya, and this is both the short-term consequences of the uprising and the violence, but also long-term consequences of the Gaddafi regime and the systematic torture that was happening during his time. And any future government of Libya faces massive challenges in alleviating human suffering and improving mental health and addressing the adverse conflict-related health impacts. And as we see, the internal conflict continues. More and more people will be affected by these violations, aggravating mental health afflictions and straining the social fabric and the capacity of the Libyan state. And this study was completed last year, and as we've seen, the development in Libya has really only worsened. The country has experienced a peak in arms, smuggling networks, refugees, migrants, and the armed militia has really gained ground and now the strongest factor, stronger than the politicians and the parliamentary system. And in the midst of this chaos, you have ISIS gaining ground in the country and exploiting this security vacuum that has been since the militias came in and took over. And this has really created even more insecurity and suffering. And a lot of our partners that we worked with on this have fled the country. So this is very unfortunate. And to just end this, I would just like to acknowledge that obviously Dignity for supporting this study. We cooperated with the Bezaid University in Ramallah, Palestine, and the Benghazi University, the medical faculty, and the research and consulting center. And of course, thank you to the Peace Caucus for making this session possible. So, and thank you for coming.